welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host and producer. Delighted to be with you today, September 16th, if you're in the United States. It's a new year for certain cultures in the world. Happy New Year. And welcome. I'm excited to have Jason Shar with us today. He's a product manager in Yammer. He's a founder of Heat Data. He'll be talking about data-informed product management and how to get into software and tech product management. Very excited to have him. Also excited that this is our 100th recorded, well, live broadcast, actually. Yes! 100 episodes! Recording. We haven't done 100 here at Studio 132, but certainly the best recordings, the best audio experience has been the ones that are coming out of Studio 132 with our engineer, BZ Lewis. And you're listening to Blame Sally, the music in the background. Thank you, Blame Sally, a local San Francisco band. Excellent music. So I'm Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. for Fred Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-M. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. You can find us on the web at PRODMGMTTALK. That's our Twitter handle. That's our hashtag. You can search for us and find archives of our past talks, as well as before we became a broadcast, we were a Twitter chat. There are also archives of transcripts of Twitter discussions with experts, thought leaders, and practitioners in product management. So I want to thank our sponsors who bring the Global Product Management Talk to you weekly, the AIPMM. At AIPMM is the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, promoting worldwide excellence in product management education with trainings, certifications, and professional networking opportunities. Check them out at www.aipmm.com. They have a great webinar series. And also want to welcome the Singapore Meetup, who has joined the Startup Product Movement. Thank you, Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprint.ly. You can find them on the web at Sprint.ly, bringing the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what programmers are doing. Get 10% off the first 3 months of your using Sprint.ly. Use code PRODMGMTTALK2013. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. The Global Product Management Talk is a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. It's a discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about products, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and excellence. There are archives now of 100 other episodes that you can listen to. It's also available on iTunes. There's an Android app, and it's syndicated on Stitcher and across most podcast platforms. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK. By the way, if you're tweeting today, I will be reading the tweets and do a shout-out to you. And I just want to mention a few things happening in the product management world. This week in Zurich is a product management festival. Shout out to my colleagues and product managers, project managers, agile people who are converging in Zurich to discuss product management for a few days. Very exciting. Last week we talked about the ProdBoc, the Product Management Body of Knowledge, which is a historic document. It's the first time that the guide to the product management and product marketing body of knowledge has been collected in one 364-page document. It was a three-year effort by over 60 contributors who represent trainers, consultants, practitioners, and experts in product management. It's available on Amazon. And the startup product at startupproduct.com is a movement for product excellence. There is a big event happening October 10th through 12th at Broadway Studios here in San Francisco. The Startup Product Summit follows workshops, product workshops in competitive insights and how to build your product the lean startup way. That's on Thursday, October 10th. On Friday, October 11th, is Startup Product Summit, SF2. Very excited that our speaker today, Jason Shaw, is also speaking in person at the summit. The summit is like TED Talks for products. Following the Startup Product Summit on Saturday is Product Camp San Francisco. Product camps are a worldwide movement. They were started here in Silicon Valley by Rich Marinoff, who is also a speaker at the summit. You can go to pcampsf.com and propose a session. So that's an unconference where we vote on what session's going to be offered. So come join us. Just go to startupproduct.com. You'll see all the information. Sponsors are welcome to showcase their products, demo their products, and provide swag and offers and reach the community of, gosh, the startup product community is growing. There's over 1,600. I think we're going to reach 1,700 people at sfproducttalks.com. Welcome to the Product Talk Sydney, Australia meetup that is joined. Welcome to the Singapore meetup, AIPM meetup that is joined. Welcome to Startup Product Talks East Bay, Oakland, a vibrant community there. And we look forward to you having a product camp, Oakland or East Bay, in the near future. Okay, so today we are talking about Data-informed product management with Jason Shaw. According to Jason, product management is the process of building, testing, measuring, and maintaining good software. He quotes Jeffrey Moore, who wrote Crossing the Chasm, as saying, "You actually have your hand on the tiller that changes the fate of your company. So it's an amazing privilege to work in a high-tech company because the amount of power you get, particularly if you can get into this role of product marketing and product management, is the ability to affect the direction of the product." By the way, if you're listening live, you can join us and call into the show at 323-927-2957. Jason and I will be delighted to talk with you, and our engineer, BZ Lewis, will screen your call. Also, I'm told that the best experience, if you are listening live, is to call in and listen on the phone to 323-927-2957, and BZ can put you in listen only. But going forward, if you want to get the archives, and this will be available on demand, just go to blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. You'll see all the past 99 episodes, and you'll get pinged for upcoming episodes. So let me tell you about Jason. He's a product manager at Yammer, where he focuses on building out new features for the leading enterprise social network that was acquired by Microsoft in 2012 for $1.2 billion. He's also the founder of Heat Data, a mobile analytics tool for seeing how customers interact with your websites and apps, which was a winner at TechCrunch Disrupt 2012. Prior to Yammer and Heat Data, Jason founded IneedAPencil.com, which provides free online education tools to students from low-income families. After growing IneedAPencil to more than 50,000 users, with an average score increase of 202 points, he sold IneedAPencil to CK12 in 2011. Jason's work has been featured in media outlets such as CNN, The New York Times, Inc. Magazine, People Magazine, Forbes, TechCrunch, and many others. He holds an AB with honors from Harvard College with degrees in sociology and computer science. He blogs regularly at blog.jasonshah, that's jasonshah.org, and he tweets shorter thoughts at Jason Yogesh Shah. Let me spell that out. His Twitter handle is JasonYogeshshah. So if you want to follow him on Twitter. And he has been very generous. He's teaching a course at Udemy called How to Get a Job in Product Management. And he is generously offering listeners, members in the startup community, a 50% off his course, which looks excellent. Check it out. You can get this offer by going to bit.ly/PMTalkShah. That's PMTalkShah. You can also get this if you are a member of any of the startup product meetups. You can go to sfproducttalks.com, join to get access to this, and as well as other offers to the upcoming summit and other product events. I want to say that we started as a Twitter chat over 100 episodes ago, and I put out a tweet saying, hey, we should totally do a Twitter chat for product managers so we can cross boundaries as product management professionals all over the world. And the tweet was picked up in Australia by Brainmates, Adrian Tan. We started a Twitter chat with a Socratic format where we would bring in the thought leader. We'd talk with them on Skype and we would tweet out questions and answers. We found that often learning how to tweet and following a Twitter chat takes some onboarding. So from Twitter, we started recording our discussions, and then I found Blog Talk Radio, so we started tweeting and talking. Then we moved over to Pure Audio with a tweeting back channel. And what's great is coming into a studio, we can cover all modes. So if people are tweeting, they can participate in the tweets, and if they are listening on audio. So I want to give a shout out to some of our listeners. Hi, Bruce McCarthy. He's at D8A_driven, and he's an organizer of startup product meetups in Boston. Thanks for your retweets. Alicia Dixon is a regular listener, and she's out on the East Coast. She'll be joining us for the summit coming up in October. Thanks for your retweets. Thanks, John Peltier. Thank you, Andre at Dell, for your retweets. Thank you, Ryan Glasgow, who retweeted the press release talking about data-informed product management. Thank you, Stephen Ha, for tweeting. Sprint.ly, welcome and thanks for your tweet. Matthias Wyman, thank you for tweeting. There's some tweets going out about the Startup Product Summit. One of them was, great product equals simplicity and beauty. Beauty, says Kenneth Norton, who is a speaker at Startup Product Summit. Thank you, Sabina Kember. Thank you, Sean Sullivan. Lots of great tweeters out there connecting with us. So I'm going to, we do have some questions planned to discuss with Jason. One of the first questions was, how does product management think of features to build? And I'm going to tweet that out, so if you want to answer that. And given that we are at the 100th episode, what's really exciting is that this Twitter chat, so it spawned this broadcast. We're getting over 30,000 listeners to this podcast, the Global Product Management Talk. We've had speakers who are product managers, practitioners, innovation thinkers, practitioners across the board from product marketing to branding to user experience, who have also spoken in person at our meetups. So from people listening to this broadcast, we started in-person meetups, and now there's across the board, people are bringing the meetups to their communities because everyone resonates with product excellence and everyone wants to engage in a conversation. Like, these are important conversations. How do you define what product excellence is? I like to talk to people. I have plenty to say, as you can tell. But I learned so much from talking with other people and engaging them in conversations of what they're passionate about. There are so many extremely bright and passionate people who are involved in forwarding products from coding to user experience to customer experience to all of these emerging disciplines that you see around startups, but also disrupting enterprises. So the startup product movement is about product excellence. It's about a holistic view of product, and it's about bringing cross-functional and cross-discipline perspectives together. So often in companies, people are often in silos. The engineers are in a different part of the building or in a different cluster of desks than the product managers will be. The product marketers, if there are even product marketers, will be in a different place. So the startup product movement is about bringing all the different disciplines together to talk about product excellence. So yay, Jason, thank you for being with us on our 100th episode. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that was a very generous introduction. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So great to have you. So we did prepare a couple of questions, but why don't you give us some, just tell us a little bit more about yourself. What is it like to work at a company that's been acquired by Microsoft? How has your job changed? Any perspective? It's, you know, very interesting. Even if you want to talk about I Need a Pencil, just I want to say, because that's totally aligned with the startup product movement for product excellence, which is about, you know, product excellence is being defined as products that contribute to betterment of the users and of the greater community. And I have tweeted out the first tweet. I have given some shout outs to our tweeters who are and our loyal fans who are out there, the passionate product people. So we started just to bring you back in. One of the first questions that we decided to talk about is, how does product management think of features to build? Do you want to answer that and then fill in everything else around that?
Yeah, that sounds like a great place to start. So in my time at Yammer, we've mainly thought about coming up with new features in a few different ways. Part of it is certainly from the customer side. Because we build enterprise software, we certainly use customer feedback as an input. In addition to that, though, you know, we are talking about data-informed product management. And so we collect and monitor usage data about how people are actually interacting with Yammer. So are they posting messages more or less today? Are they, you know, signing in for more mobile devices? Maybe we can think about new features on mobile to make it easier to post messages. And of course, we run A/B tests as well that show us, you know, how, you know, a feature will actually impact user engagement or retention or virality of the product. And when we do that, not only does it tell us whether or not we should release a given feature, but it sparks ideas about other things we can build.
So you're identifying what features based on feedback from your users and based on all kinds of details that the users are providing.
I think that's certainly one important input for us. In addition to that, though, we also, you know, simply just go to first principles sometimes.
And first principles meaning?
And really what that means, right, is just thinking about, like, how do people work today, right? Are they in meetings? Are they exchanging files? We sort of do research even with people who don't use our product so that we can figure out where do we need to fill in gaps in our product. So our users won't necessarily tell us that we need to build something to replace meetings or something to kill email or things outside of our product they have a hard time giving us feedback on. So sometimes we just go to the first principles of how people actually behave today and think about how to incorporate that into actual feature ideas.
So are you actually watching people, in the wild to see how they're working in order to determine, or are you using, other sources of research, or just watching people in the office?
No, that's right. We Yeah, I mean, honestly, in my ideal world, I would have a view into any, you know, random cubicle in the world, although that sounds like a terrible security risk. But yeah, I mean, it's basically just literally understanding how people work by either watching people in cubicles or doing interviews with non-users, of course, doing competitive research with other products then to figure out what sort of first principle problems are they solving. Like Google Hangouts, for example, has solved a key problem, right, around meeting in distributed teams. So there's another area that, you know, we might not be thinking about if we only saw how people are working in, like, San Francisco tech startups. But if we keep an eye on how other people are building products, then sometimes we notice things that we may have missed about how people are, in fact, behaving today.
Awesome. Yeah, so the answers on Twitter, that Bruce McCarthy is saying, in answer to how does product management identify features to build, he says the primary way is to understand market needs and problems. Hi, Katie Wally Wyget at KitKat00. welcome back. We've missed you. She says that current customer feedback, usage data, deeper dive market research with prospects, and recent evaluators is step number one in what where product management looks to identify features as well. Totally aligned with what you're saying.
I think that's right in many ways. I think that's right. I think one thing to call out, though, is, you know, we've certainly been led astray sometimes, though, by customer feedback, right? There's a very nuanced way that one should perceive that feedback, and it's important, for example, to listen, in my opinion, for problems and not solutions, right? Because customers don't necessarily understand the cost of implementing something or maintaining a feature, and it's kind of just sometimes a wish list for them when they get to sit down with a product manager and tell them all the things that they would like to see. So I think, you know, customer feedback is certainly right, but it's a very nuanced concept in that it's not simply just listen to your customers and build whatever they ask for either.
Excellent. Thank you for that deeper slice. That's totally true. Right. Customers don't, well, they not only do they not know what they want, they don't know what your roadmap is. They don't see a big picture. So that's very important to the product management muscle as well. You know, how to not only take this feedback, but how to filter it appropriately, and then how to make a case for what features should be built.
Exactly. Yep, totally.
Cool. So let me, it's so hard to, the few technologies is multitasking, tweeting, reading the tweets, and carrying on the conversation. So it's all great. Okay, getting that tweet out. So question number two is, and it's really, you know, following, how do you even identify what features to build, but then how do you prioritize the feature? So you're somewhat alluding to this. You know, once you have this list of features and you're getting feedback from all these different places and you're diving deeper, recognizing that customer feedback is only one data point, how do you then prioritize features? Do you actually have a system?
Yeah, it's certainly not black and white, because there's often subjectivity around whether or not a feature is important, right? And once you've actually, say, come up with a backlog, right, which often happens, of ideas, it becomes then sort of a fight between either different PMs, or if sales has a say into what gets built, then they'll be advocating for things that, you know, their customer wants. What I've found in my experience at Yammer, though, is, again, to bring back to data, you know, we often then look, so, okay, if people want a new way to view files, for example, we'll look at, you know, how many files are being opened on a given month by our active users, what sort of files are being opened, because maybe somebody thinks we need a file viewer, but if, in fact, most of the files that are being uploaded are, you know, JPEGs or PNGs or something, then it's not actually about Word documents necessarily. So we really dive into what the specifics are around what we could build. And then we try to the extent possible, predict the sort of bang for our buck that we'll get. And it's some mix of impact on engagement with and our important metrics, which are engagement, retention, virality, and monetization to some extent. And then the engineering cost, right? So sometimes you can get serious bang for your buck with a very small change. I remember one time we made our feed, where all the stories in Yammer come through, more legible. And it was a simple, you know, series of CSS changes, but it ended up having a dramatic impact on engagement that an alternate, say, three-month project might never bring.
Yeah, you know, and you reminded me, we talked about this offline, that we're talking about software product management here, and certainly software is key in all products these days, but, you know, Jason has a specific perspective and a lot of excellent tools enabling him to get this feedback that you might not be available, but certainly you should, if you have a website, these tools are also available. So, Bruce McCarthy just tweeted out a whole presentation he gave on prioritization from Product Camp Boston. Thanks, Bruce. We've had whole discussions, several hour discussions on prioritization. So we can go really deep into that. But let's keep on, you know, specific to your experience at Yammer. And I'm quite envious of all the excellent tools you have.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky in that sense to have a lot of, you know, in-house tools, for example, that have been built specifically to support this sort of data-informed product development. That being said, you know, if we were either smaller or if we were a hardware startup where you couldn't necessarily A/B test things, or if I was in a larger enterprise environment where it's not okay to release something out to a customer and then pull it back if it doesn't work, you know, I'd have to find some sort of substitute for this sort of data, right? Instead, it's, you know, people in the conversation have mentioned, you know, market research. So if we were thinking about a change to our iPhone app or Android app or Windows app, of course, we would have to then, I think the data that everybody would have is, you know, how many users do they have on that platform? What's the growth rate like for that platform and whether they want to build right for where the puck is going or where it is today? So there's substitutes for the data, but I agree that, you know, some companies are privileged to have the ability to pull data on millions of users or test things in a matter of hours sometimes because they have so many users. I know Facebook sometimes can both build and release and conclude an A/B test in the same day sometimes.
Yes. So just to define A/B testing, it means that you put out two alternative versions of perhaps the same page or the same call to action, and then you test what the response rates are. And you get all kinds of data and feedback, so you can identify, you know, what is the right message or what is the right positioning, what is the right user experience. And they have quite complex ways of doing this kind of testing. It's very exciting. So Katie Wally Weigand, her answer to our question too was, data is a great balancer to the loudest voice department, but it's meaningless for high, low, medium rankings because it takes time to build data. And that's for sure. So yes, but when you're that's why Jason is particularly well positioned to get access to great data. And, you know, look, that's what I would say why Yammer got purchased, because of that enabling that focus on data and responding appropriately.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, one of the things that Microsoft looks to get out of Yammer is to figure out how to apply this sort of way of building software to the rest of their suite, right? I mean, it's pretty crazy to think that they have, compared to the way that Yammer has data, Microsoft has virtually zero user data on really how people use Excel or how people use Microsoft Word. I mean, of course, they have some usability studies that they may have done, and they have sales data, but they're more about number of seats than actual engagement. So it's certainly true that one of the things we're trying to do at Microsoft is help make them a more data-informed product organization. And if that could happen across the entire Microsoft suite, you can only imagine, you know, that impact would be much broader than anything that we were able to achieve with Yammer prior to that acquisition. In regards to what Katie was saying about, you know, data being a balancer to the loudest voice department and with regard to high, low, medium rankings, I think she's definitely right in that you can't just, if you just start with poor high, low, medium rankings and you don't have the right buckets to begin with, then data might just be supporting sort of the wrong arguments or the wrong features in the first place. That being said, I mean, the loudest voice department, I think, in the past is something that without data would be the one to rule, actually, because you would find that people who could argue and just pound their fist on the table or a customer that sounded really angry would get their way. And if there was no data, then you would just say, well, this is the only input we have, or this is the only or this is the loudest one, so let's go in this direction. When really, I think data is definitely an equalizer now, because we've tested things where we have a very vocal minority of customers asking for things, and we know that they're a vocal minority because we can look at the data around how other people are using the product. And we've even made some changes where we've tested a new feature that the vocal minority did in fact ask for. Not only was it flat in engagement across our entire user base, but even the loud people who were asking for it didn't end up using it. Even on the phone, they say, yeah, I love it, I'm so glad you made it. They actually weren't even interacting with the feature sometimes.
Excellent. So, and I'm pulling up our third question. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about data-informed product management. If you're tweeting, please use the hashtag PRODMGMTTALK.
Cindy, I think we were going to talk about how does one measure success, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so how do let's go there. So how do you measure success for, and let's even be more specific.
Okay, sounds good. But so basically, in terms of measuring success, I would just call out that without harping on data too much more than we already have, I would say that we always start with a goal or a hypothesis, right? And we're trying to solve some sort of user problem. So when I worked on building chat here, we wanted to make Yammer a more real-time product and make it so that the problem being that people using Yammer didn't feel like they were able to get quick answers from their colleagues, right? So part of the problem that chat was solving was that one. And then we, of course, have other problems that we try to solve, like, we want more people to use groups in Yammer. So when we did a project to increase the relevance of groups that were suggested for people to join, again, that was like the problem we're trying to solve, is to make it easier. Well, it's hard for people to find the right group for them to join. That's the problem. And we validated that with data by telling how many groups was the average user a member of, how many groups existed in their network, and then finding the delta there and saying, okay, well, there's a lot of groups. We think that some of them may be relevant to people, but yet they're not joining them. It's possible that a problem here is that people are having a hard time discovering what's relevant to them. And so there's a hypothesis that we start out with, and then we go ahead and build the feature. We're able, whether it's in an A-B test or if you don't have the ability to run A-B test, you can certainly sort of look at before and after data, which is in a lot of ways the next best thing, even though that comes with some problems in terms of month one might be a different month than month two. So how do you parse out whether it was the feature or the month and things like that? Maybe it was a holiday and so on. But that before and after and saying, okay, more people join groups. So we had a problem. We had a goal, which was to say to increase the number of groups that people are members of. And then we're able to actually look back in hindsight and see whether or not we achieved that goal. So for us, it's mostly, again, like having a hypothesis with everything that we build and then tracking whether or not our variations map onto that. As any PM could tell you, though, right, as you probably know, right, it's not black and white. So sometimes we might increase engagement of existing users but hurt retention of new users, and then the conversation gets a lot more interesting.
Great. Hey, and the hashtag for today's chat and weekly, I'm answering some Twitter questions here, is POMG, PRODMGMTTALK. So weekly, I'll go back afterwards, and I'll do a sweep on Twitter to find all of the tweets, not only speaking to me, but across the board at PRODMGMTTALK, and try and put together a Twitter transcript so people can listen to the audio after we clean it up and also see what the tweets were. By the way, while we're somewhat at a half point, I'm speaking with Jason Shaw, who's product manager at Yammer. He's founder at Heat Data. We're talking about data-informed product management. Jason gives a course on Udemy on how to get a job in product management, and he has offered listeners a 50% off if you go to bit.ly/PMTALKSHA. That's bit.ly/PMTalkSHA. Definitely check out the course. He's also speaking at Startup Product Summit. Go to @StartupProduct and startupproduct.com and see the upcoming Product Bootcamp San Francisco. Jason is speaking on Friday at Startup Product Summit. Okay, so I think we're back on Twitter. Yes, that was indeed the third question. How does product management measure success? So you were answering it from a data-informed way. But I wonder if I could ask you, as a product manager, you know, as an individual contributor to the product, you know, how might you measure success from your own position point of view? So not just from the product point of view, but I find as a product manager coach at this point, often I'm talking to people and letting them know if they're not experiencing failure on a daily or hourly basis, they might not be doing their job.
Yeah. I think that's
no, not that I encourage experiencing failure, but so I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit more insight as like definitely you are a successful product manager and people definitely want to follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of angles to it, and it's really tough to measure success as an individual because it's a little bit, you know, fluffier than measuring success when what you do is very quantitative. If you're a hedge fund trader, you can tell how much money you made in a quarter, and that's easy to measure. But as a PM, you know, suppose in a quarter you worked on 5 different features and you ended up not shipping 4 of them because, you know, either the company changed direction or you ended up realizing that it would be worse for the product if you shipped it or any number of things. It's actually great when you can either kill an existing feature or decide not to release something that would be bad for engagement, retention, virality, or monetization, right? You figured something out, and usually it's by that sort of learning that you can measure success as opposed to whether or not you shipped everything out to production. So I would say, you know, one of the funnier ways that I like to measure success sometimes, honestly, is by the number of sad faces I see in the morning. And if people on my team are sad, it's probably not a good thing, and it's a simple check on whether or not, you know, we're moving past roadblocks fast enough or whether people feel enthused about what we're building and so on. On a high level, I would just say, though, that there are so many complicated aspects to doing product management well that it's not black and white at all. Having a performance review, for example, in a big company as a PM, it can be, I would imagine, an extremely frustrating thing. I think that PMs should measure their personal success by, you know, what's their team happiness like, for one, but maybe your team is just happy doing small things. So that in itself is not a perfect measure, but also then looking at how much are you learning and how fast are you moving as a team. And if it's been a whole quarter and you've only learned a small bit about your users or small bit about the future of your product, of course, small and large is a relative term. But if you're moving fast and you're learning a lot, then I think that it's not just a nice and fuzzy thing to say. It's a materially good thing for a PM to be doing those things. And maybe the next quarter they will ship 5 out of 5 things, and that's great. But they can't just measure themselves by the number of things that they ship out to the whole customer base, because that incentivizes the wrong sort of thinking.
Excellent. So there's some side conversations happening here. Going back to, they were talking about, Bruce and Katie were answering question 2. But why don't we move on to question 4, which again, you've been answering in some way, which is, what are the most important product management metrics? And how would you recognize what they are? Are they not totally contextual?
Gotcha. So I think at some level there's the product metrics, and then there's what you were mentioning about, you know, the PM, what sort of metrics. I think that as far as the product metrics go, you know, like you said, I mentioned earlier what I consider to be 4 main buckets, and there are derivations of this, but right, engagement, retention, virality, monetization. So are people using your product more often? And that breaks down into a number of contextualized things. So if you're Google, for example, you wouldn't necessarily consider a good engagement metric increased time spent on Google search pages, right? Because you're probably then returning worse results. For us, for example, one of our engagement metrics is days engaged. So we want people, ideally in Yammer, to be spending roughly, say, at least five days in a week accessing Yammer, because that means that they're using us every day of the work week, and that's a leading indicator of them being, you know, engaged in the long run. And the retention, right, we want to see, it's easy for us to maybe sign up new users sometimes because we have an extremely viral product, but we measure 1 in 7 day retention separately. So after somebody signs up in the 24 to 48 hour period, are they coming back, right? Did we create something that they just signed up for because a coworker told them about, or is it something that they want to repeat visit, you know, in the short term? And then even 7 days later, did they come back after that initial blast of engagement that we saw? And those are somewhat different retention indicators. And like I mentioned, virality, right? Like, this is something that matters to varying extents depending on the life cycle of the company. So Facebook, for example, with more than 1 billion active users, and there's only something like 2.4 billion people who even have access to the internet in the world, you know, virality, I think, for them has become less critical compared to driving constant engagement and driving up the number of times somebody uses Facebook in a given day and the number of times they use it from a mobile platform and things like that. Whereas for us, for example, we have a sign-up flow that encourages you to invite your colleagues. We have, you know, tools within Yammer to import, you know, addresses from your company and so on. And it's still an extremely important thing for us because we have approximately, you know, 8 million users, but there's still a lot of enterprise users out there. So for us, virality is still important, and we measure that by invitation sent, converted users that were viral as opposed to organic users. And then lastly, monetization is a pretty straightforward one, I think, for most products. So those are some of the metrics that we think about. A different framing on it, though, would be the pirate metrics that Dave McClure has shared around, you know, activation and acquisition and so on.
Right. The pirate, because you can pronounce them R. There is a pirate talk day, by the way. I don't know when it is.
Exactly.
Having nothing to do with tech. Excellent, excellent. So question five, I was thinking about in terms of the course that you give at Udemy. By the way, Jason has put together an excellent course on how to get a job in product management. And he's offering 50% off at Udemy at bit.ly/PMTALKSHAH. Check it out. So the question, and you talk about the product management interview, and this is totally jumping away from discussing metrics into individual practitioners, people wanting to get into data-driven product management, wanting to get a position, people coming into San Francisco all the time, wanting to get into product management. So what would you tell them are common product management interview questions for this kind of position?
Sure. So there are at least a couple things that often get asked in these sort of interviews. One would certainly be a fun one where it's, you know, simply tell me about your favorite app, and then let's talk about things that you would maybe add to it or change about it or remove, or you know, practical questions like that. And oftentimes, before a candidate can even dive into what they would say there, though, they have to list out, you know, maybe five things, because at least for two reasons. One is that list just gives a nice spread of the sort of things that person's interested in and, you know, how they're engaged in the product world. So if they're saying, you know, oh, I'm a big fan of, I don't know, some really stodgy software from a long time ago, it's like, well, that's interesting. Whereas if they say something more about, oh, I use Rise for my alarm clock and I use TaskRabbit for this, whatever, you know, it creates a certain bias, but it at least suggests that they're aware of sort of some of the latest technologies. The other reason that list is important is then it allows the interviewer to actually filter out things that the person might have wanted to talk about. So if you just let them go off on whatever they want to talk about, it's very likely that they probably had something prepared So if you're interviewing, you should definitely have multiple things in mind, because the question might come up also in multiple interviews. So only having like Spotify or Yelp in your back pocket kind of limits you, and you might get asked instead about your usage of RDO or something. So you should be able to be versatile enough to not just be trying to fool somebody with some sort of canned response. Another type of question is when people are asked to reverse engineer features. So, for example, you know, Spotify has tested and released something that's basically suggested playlists, right? So when you fire up their desktop app, they'll show you an overlay of a bunch of, you know, relevant playlists based on your prior listening history. And so when you ask then a candidate, you know, why do you think they built this? It's kind of an open canvas for them to talk, and it begins to expose their awareness of engineering trade-offs, product vision, realizing the company's goals. You know, Spotify is obviously trying to monetize quite heavily. So, you know, if you get people that have playlists, they're more likely to upgrade to premium because they get more engaged with the product. They probably want to listen to those playlists on mobile, which you have to be a premium subscriber for. So anyway, those are a couple examples of questions that I've either asked or seen asked before.
Excellent. And they're technical focused. And so you can assume that depending on what domain the product is that you're interviewing for, they're going to expect you to have domain knowledge and be able to speak to that. And so I do tell people, gee, research not only the company, research their competitive space prior to the interview and even once you're on the job. The people who are using your competitors' products are a good source of information as well. Why are they using those products, and why aren't they using any product? Be able to speak to that and with specific details of what your product vision is, what the roadmap would be, why you would choose features, and when. Bruce McCarthy has a question referring back to an earlier piece about how do you build measurement for of all the metrics that you mentioned into your product?
I'll take a crack at it, but let me know if I'm going off in left field and it's a little different than what Bruce intended. But what I would suggest is if you're building a new product and you're trying to build it in from the start, I mean, there are tools like Google Analytics or Mixpanel or Kissmetrics, or you know, you mentioned earlier Heat Data, the mobile analytics tool that I'm providing to people. Like, these are things that you can use from day one, even before you've grown your product into, you know, a million type of user base. So when that's the case and you are small, I think that you can, with Mixpanel, for example, you can set up events. So if a user clicks this or if they drop off in the funnel here, you can do that from day one. And it's built into the product even literally, right, because your code is integrated with the code of these analytics systems. And when that's the case, at least it ensures that in the future you're thinking about the right metrics because you've ingrained that sort of metrics mindset through and through your product.
Excellent. Okay. And let's see, we are coming to the end of the hour. Let me do a quick, you want to give us some ending, well, this was a shortened episode. We had some technical features, technical issues, which is ironically historic before going back to the beginning of why we're on Twitter and how this became a broadcast. But so the last question was, how can people get into product management? And it's fine with me if we go over the hour. So the question to you is, how can people get into product management?
So I would say there's a few things. But again, just correct me if any of this is out there, but I would say there's a few things at least. You know, one is obviously to research product management as much as possible. There's so much written on Quora and on individual blogs. So there's a post about what separates a top 1% PM from the top 10% written by Ian McAllister, who's at Amazon for a long time. That's on Quora. Andrew Chen and Josh Ellman write a lot about product management as well. Andrew Chen is a former entrepreneur, and Josh Ellman is now a partner at Greylock Ventures. So they've written a lot, as well as Ken Norton from Google Ventures and Jackie Bavaro from Asana have all written quite a bit about product management and what they look for in hiring and just in general how to think about product management and not just from, you know, the sort of metrics perspective, that we were talking about today. In addition to that, you know, Twitter, as clearly you're a fan of, and the audience is as well, I mean, people are very open to simply being, you know, tweeted at and asked questions about their products, or take somebody there for coffee or something, or a meal if you're in the same city. So that's always an option for people as well. And honestly, then, I mean, once you've started to get a sense for what product management is like, you've reached out to some people, one of the most common hurdles is that somebody doesn't have prior product management experience. And when that's the case, I usually recommend that people either work on a side project or somehow build something, whether it's going to hackathons or what have you, because people are going to say, okay, you're a business systems analyst at X large company. Why should I believe that you're a good PM? And if you can shift the conversation to, well, here's this, you know, web app that I worked on, even if you didn't code it yourself, maybe you worked on it with somebody else at a hackathon, then if you can do that, then it's like, oh, why did you make these product decisions? Or how did you think about user experience here? Or what sort of metrics were you looking at? And then it's not so much about how is this a relevant job relevant to PM. It's like, oh, you've done something relevant to PM. Let's sink our teeth into the interesting product questions there. So I think if it's a matter of like researching space, so Quora and blogs are great for that, then you know, try to reach out to people, build relationships with people in the product world. There are a lot of great meetups as well. And of course, you know are at the helm of that. And then, you know, if you can somehow, you know, it's still going to be tough even with those relationships and that knowledge, because people will look at the resume and have questions. So that's why it's super important to fill that gap with some sort of work that just ultimately shows that you know how to get things done. And that can take many different types of, whether, like I said, a side project, or I know people have kickstarted email newsletters and they build communities and they show how, here's the problem I was trying to solve, here's the execution I did, here's how I iterated on it, here's how I measured things, and so on. And those are ultimately the things, right, that a PM does. It's just in a different domain. So those are some things I would suggest. And even in your company, if there is a PM role, maybe, you know, sit next to the PMs or start seeing where they could use help and start pitching in. Those are a few things that I would suggest.
Excellent. Excellent. By the way, not only is Jason speaking at the upcoming Startup Product Summit, but Josh Ellman that he mentioned, Ken Norton that he mentioned, Rich Marinoff, a lot of the top speakers about product management, the top thinkers and the movers and shakers from the San Francisco Bay Area and Silicon Valley are speaking at Startup Product Summit. And truthfully, we put together this conference to help people get onboarded into product management. There are so many people coming to San Francisco wanting to get into product management. It looks like an attractive opportunity for them. They want to make a difference. They care about product excellence. They don't have a clue where to start. And so the startup product movement is all about pretty much onboarding people into product professions, whether it be product management, product marketing, user experience across the board. And the product bootcamp is all about the first day is workshops to find out about the competitive market, how to build the lean startup way with Dan Olson, competitive market beyond Google Insights with Sean Campbell. The summit is lightning talks, basically TED Talks for product and product excellence with Jason, Ken, Josh, all of the stars, the rock stars in the product management world. And the following day, Product Camp San Francisco, that's a true on conference where you can network, find open positions, share your expertise, and find other people in at various points in their product management career. So check it out at startupproduct.com. Thank you, Jason, for joining the 100th episode of the Global Product Management Talk. We'll send you a widget so you'll be able to listen to a clean copy of this, and we'll capture it. Thanks to our tweeters who were tweeting during the conversation, Katie and Bruce and a whole group of people, Sean. I'll capture them into a transcript so people can read the tweets and continue this conversation, because this was a highlight of answering these questions. We certainly can spend a whole day discussing this, and this is very important. I really appreciate your offer for 50% off your Udemy course.
Absolutely.
how to get a job in product management, go to bit.ly/PMTalkShah. That's PMTalkShah. Join us next week when Teresa Torres, who writes the Product Talk blog, and she's VP of Products at After College, will be joining us for the hour. She is also speaking both at Startup Product Summit. She's proposed a session for Product Camp San Francisco. If you follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, you will get pinged with the upcoming episodes, and you can access the archive of past episodes. Thanks again to our speakers. Check them out at AIPMM, at sprint.ly, and startupproduct.com. Register today for the best price and sponsor. Provide your swag, provide raffle items, and reach the product management community that's growing in San Francisco and worldwide. We will be filming the summit. We'd love to live stream if you want to support our efforts and sponsor our live streaming. We have people signing up in Boston and worldwide who would love to join the live stream of the summit on October 11th. Thanks again, Jason, for joining us.
Thank you, Cindy.
Look forward to hearing you speak in person. Hi, Hala Salah, who just joined in. You'll be able to listen from the beginning in a few minutes, or in a half hour. The post-production of the audio will be available. Maybe an hour, says BZ Lewis, our engineer. Thanks again, Jason, and we'll catch you offline and in person. Very, very exciting, and just honored to have you on the show. Shout out to the Global Product Management Talk community. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Twitter and again here next week. Have a great week.
On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.